Let's just talk about it. It's the news, according to me. Top of the morning to you, folks. It is January 30th, 8:38 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Not an easy day. Not an easy day for me. I have chai in my cup, and I have the last remaining bit of sweet tea, homemade sweet tea, with me, just so you know. Not going to be very jovial this morning. Tragic plane crash last night in D.C. An airline called PSA, which is a regional for American Airlines, going from Wichita to D.C., Reagan National, an airport that I'm very familiar with, flown in and out of there many times as the pilot, as well as a passenger. Very familiar with the approach that they were on last night. Done it many times. The I don't work for PSA, crew members that I know travel on them a lot. I travel on them occasionally, and crew members do what's called deadheading, where the company might be, if say one particular regional has or mainline has a particular pilot in a particular area, or they might be commuting to work or back home or just traveling on their own, going someplace to buy a car or something, who knows. They might be deadheading as a jump seater or as a non-rev on a flight. And they may not work for that particular company, but they work for what's called mainline or another regional or even another offline carrier if they're jump seating or doing some kind of a non-rev. So I don't know yet if I know anybody on the flight. I haven't heard crew member names. I haven't heard anything about anybody being on there. I know that there could be, but there may not be. It's a large community, but it's not a very large community. I mean, it is actually it's a close knit community, even though it's rather large. It's not it is rare. I mean, it's when you stop and think about it, how many pilots there are, how many airline pilots there are in the country compared to the number of people there are in the country. It's a very small percentage of the population, and it's at one time or another you probably have met someone or seen someone or ridden on a plane that they've flown or whatever. So for those of you who haven't heard yet, those of you who don't know what happened last night, an airplane going from Wichita, Kansas to D.C., Reagan National, at about almost 9 o'clock, was on the approach to runway 1, which comes up the river from the south. Now, the river visual has a little bend in it that because of a bird sanctuary. The ILS just takes you straight in. Most people I know do not take the little bend around the little bird sanctuary thing. They just fly straight in. It's you want to remain stabilized. It's a goofy little S-turn that somehow, I guess the birds know that you're moving over 300 feet. I don't know how that works, but apparently they have a little sign or something on. The might be more about noise abatement, but it's ridiculous. I used to be that I back in the day, back in the early aughts, they call it, back in the 2004, 2005. I was flying a CRJ 200 back then, and I've gone in there both in a CRJ 200 and a Embraer 170, 175. So The RJ has a tendency, you pretty much always land with full flaps with an RJ. This was a 700, way I understand it. It was a 700 series RJ. And they were on the approach to runway one. Now, controllers often ask for pilots to go over to runway 33 so they can get more people in. They can keep packing people in faster. Runway one is, they're calling it the busiest runway in the world because they only have really one main runway there. And it's a very busy runway. And of course, when the wind is out of the south, then it becomes runway 19. Of course, they have 33 and 15 as well, which is kind of an angling runway, but that's only 5,000 feet long. And typically you have to be configured for that. Not just anybody can do that, depending on what they weigh. They can't always take off on it. They can sometimes, with some of that, what they call the numbers for it. They can't accelerate, stop, all that kind of stuff. And sometimes they can't even land without reconfiguring and putting in some many airplanes, like the 170, 175, and many others, don't always land with full flaps. You have to have full flaps on to land on runway 33, typically, normally, to have the landing distance numbers. The wind was howling out of the northwest, so it wasn't too big of a deal, the way I understand it. So it was, they probably could get the numbers without even worrying about it, but the CRJ-200, like I said, normally, and the 700, normally have they're normally configured, they can do either one. And I've done the sidestep many times over to that runway. As I've grown older, and the more experience I got at it, the less I liked doing that. And I typically would discourage my first officers from doing it, from receiving it. I just would tell them ahead of time, if they ask for it, we're not receiving it. We're not going to accept it. Only way we might do it is if the runway is closed for FOD or something. You know, somebody's stuck on the runway with a flat tire or something like that. But it has to be brief, and you have to be able to, you know, make sure we have everything configured and ready to go. You can't just. You know, I was in the training department in an airline, and this is what we train for. This is what instructors. I think it hits us probably harder when something like this happens because this is everything that we do is. We have a passion for safety and flight and successful flight, and that's why we train us. We put our heart and soul into this stuff. So it's very difficult when something like this happens, especially when they did everything right. The pilots did everything right. The only thing they didn't do was because they were so focused on the approach. And it's a busy airport. It's a busy area. That river visual, everything's happening all at once. You're basically in a turn the whole way down. You're in a left bank, which makes it hard to see somebody coming up to you from the right, which is exactly where the helicopter was coming from. The helicopter was converging on them at an angle where you can't. They didn't have headlights in their eyes. They didn't have all they could see was the side lights of the airplane. So they light up the tail usually, and of course they have the side blinking lights and the strobes, and that's all they had on. And with all the lights around DC, it is very difficult. They blend in with the background, of course. Now, this was again. I'm just giving you my take on this kind of thing. This is probably, if I'm an expert on anything, it's probably this. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a financial counselor. I do know a little bit about aviation, and I have flown in there, so I do have some experience here. I'm talking about I'm not a military pilot. And I'm very much aware of what the training environment is like in that situation. I've known a lot of military guys, known a lot of military helicopter pilots. And they're calling this a training exercise, that the helicopters are on a training exercise. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that this is his first flight. They're not learning how to fly the helicopter. They're probably learning how to fly the corridor. So, you know, sometimes you have to do supervised flying to go through a particular area to do a particular operation. It'd be checked out on that operation. So I don't know, the helicopter pilot might have 1,000 hours in helicopter, but he'd never flown through that corridor. And it maybe military requires you to have dual, which there was three people on board the helicopter, might understand it. And so that one of those people might've been a check airman, so that kind of thing, like an overseer observer, someone who was going to guide them through whatever they were doing. I don't know. I don't know how that how the system works. Again, I'm not a military guy. I'm sure we'll learn more as time goes on. But the word on the street now from a few people that I'm not sure I trust, they're saying that the helicopter did not have the ADS-B system turned on. Now, they may have had another system turned on. Controllers, I'm not even sure that the helicopter's radio transmission was being heard by the other pilot. They could hear the tower talking to the helicopter, but I don't think they could hear the helicopter talking back to the tower. This operation at night, especially, now doing this little sidestep at night, I refuse, in fact, I don't even do it anymore. I just, unless I'm configured for it ahead of time and brief it and expect it, I'm just not even going to do it. That's just the way I've kind of told people to operate. In fact, I was going in there in a 175, and I told the FO, it was his leg, actually. And I told the FO, he said something in the approach briefing. He said something about sidestepping over 3-3. And I said, I don't recommend you do that. And this was a daylight, VFR conditions, daylight, visual flight rules. And I just said, I don't recommend we do that. I still don't accept it. It's just, there's too much going on. There's birds. There's all kinds of other things. And when they started doing the helicopter corridor thing, I started not wanting to do that so much. They fly right up alongside of where you are when you're now, and you're again the angle that you're approaching. You're basically coming in. You turn. You do a slight turn to the right, and you're in this left bank turn all the way down to about 500 feet above the ground, or less. And then you land on a runway that's 5,000 feet long, which is for an airliner that's pretty short. Even for a corporate aircraft, that's fairly short. So it's an issue of, you know, you better be on your numbers. You better be, you know, you better not be screwing around. And so you're focused on all those things, and it's very difficult, especially if you're banking to the left and the helicopter's off to your right. You can't see it. The one pilot's completely blind off to the right, the guy in the left seat. And the guy in the right seat, if he's flying, he or she, is too focused to look out the window at the time. He's trying to get the thing lined up, your visual approach, your trying to line up things and get it on the numbers, and you're too focused to be out looking around, looking out the window, putting nose prints on the window there, you know, taking pictures and figuring out where the helicopter is. So they flew the proper path. They didn't go outside of the path that they were supposed to be on. The helicopter simply did not see them because they probably saw another airplane coming in to land on runway 1. And thought they had the traffic in sight, and then they went on about their business and didn't think anything of it. Seeing an airplane from the side, converging from that angle, is very difficult. You don't have the landing lights coming at you. All you have is the side lights. So, in my opinion, which can easily blend in with everything else, and of course the plane is descending and the helicopter is flying pretty much straight and level. And they don't, you know, they kind of just came up, and they think basically the plane kind of came down on them and they came into it from the side. So it's just a recipe for the perfect disaster. And my understanding is the plane broke in half, fell into the water, landed about 7 feet of water, which is, if you know anything about that particular area of the water, it's, they're right close to the runway. They basically, all the momentum basically took them almost to the runway. The river is right there at the edge. So they're literally within probably 100 feet from the runway, and or the shoreline, I should say, is about 100 feet from the runway. They're 100 feet from the shoreline, probably a couple hundred feet. So it's just a very very tragic situation, and of course my concern goes out to those who are doing the rescue recovery operation right now. That is very dangerous to work in, especially at night. Just pray that nobody else gets hurt there. And I just pray for all the families who have lost loved ones and friends and family and fellow coworkers. The whole thing is just absolute tragedy, absolute just devastating. I can't imagine the sadness and the grief now. My heart goes out to them. I'm going to move on to some other news. We've got John F. Kennedy Jr. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. did the same thing yesterday. The left is just absolutely off their rocker, out of their living minds. There are a lot of Democrats, especially the little bit more, I would say, traditional Democrats, who have simply attacked every single nominee that's going to be on President Trump's board, on his, in his cabinet. They've gone after JFK, RFK Jr., and it's this whole thing, it's just gotten so blown out of shape. Now, of course, they feel like they've got one up on him because he has a hard time speaking, and he when he talks, it sounds like he's stammering and not confident in what he's saying, but he's actually very confident and competent in what he's saying. And I'm amazed. There are a lot of, in fact, I was just listening to Steve Turley. He was going through a bunch of tweets that people are putting out there, a bunch of Democrats. They have had it with the Democrat Party. They're sickened by what they're doing to this guy. They were quiet during the whole thing with Pete Hegseth and everybody else that's been going through. But they've had it. It's the same playbook every time somebody gets up there. What did you do in 1942? What did you do? What did you say here? What did you say there? Are you selling Bernie Sanders? You're selling onesies. You're selling onesies with not vaccinated. Okay, whatever it is. There's something about these little onesies for kids, unvaxxed and don't care. Whatever it is. I don't know what it is. They're selling onesies from some organization that he's a part of, I guess. They're selling these onesies and talk about being unvaxxed. Well, good for you. I just, so what, you want the head of the HHS to be mandating vaccines? Is that what we're doing now? We're going to mandate this stuff. Not going to make it a choice anymore. Everything's a mandate. And if you don't denounce, they kept making these comments about, if you don't denounce this, and if you don't say this, and you don't step up for this, you're going to allow people to sue this, and you're going to sue people for that, and you're going to say are you going to say you're not going to sue Big Pharma for it? He's like, I'm not saying that. I'm not going to sue Big Pharma. I'm leave it open for people to sue Big Pharma. It's just everything he says is making sense, and they're just out of their lily-livered minds, throwing these little tantrums. You should have heard Pocahontas, Elizabeth Warren, of all people, going on about this. And of course, the other day I heard Adam Schiff talk about how, well, you know, Kash Patel, what they need is to run that organization is somebody who has integrity and someone who's this and that. And of course, he would love to be in charge of the CIA or whatever it is. He's FBI, whatever it is. Yeah, I think it's the FBI. And he goes on with this whole thing about, and while he's saying that, I'm thinking, you mean all the things you're not? We could go on for days about the lies that Adam Schiff has told, and here he is sticking his nose in the air again, saying his poop doesn't stink, and this person is unqualified for this job, and I'm the authority, I'm the one with the high and mighty morals that can tell you that he's not worthy of that position. Just absolutely, I think the best name I've heard now for the Democrats is the Hippocrats. And by the way, they're Democrats; they're not Democratics. And they have done a remarkable job of people calling it the Democratic Party. It used to be the Democrat Party, and I know I've gotten on this horse before. I've gotten on this little soapbox before. I'm doing it again because guess what? I'm just noticing it all over the place all the time. The Republicans and the Democratic Party, the Democratic Party. He's in the Democratic Party. Well, you know, the Democrats, they're starting to do that now. They're starting to call them the Democrats. Because they don't like, they like that label. They like the narrative. They like the picture, the what do they call it? The optics of that name. because it makes them sound like they're more democratic. And, you know, democracy is they're for all for democracy. The Republicans are all for fascism and dictatorship. That's what they think. That's what they're trying to portray here. And all the while, they're the ones who want to be the dictators. Look at their own party. Look at their own DNC. Look at the DNC. Hey, how'd that primary go that Kamala won? How'd that go? Oh, there wasn't one. I heard somebody the other day said something about the vice president is elected to position. That's not actually what happens. The vice president serves at the pleasure of the president. You can be fired from being this. The president can ask for your resignation. That the VP can be gone with. Done away with. Can be replaced. It can happen. He's not an elected official, by the way. He's on the ticket, he or she. But it takes an act of Congress. Literally, it has to go through the Congress, Senate. I don't know what the procedures are, but I know you can get rid of them. So anyway. Because you vote for the president, you don't vote for vice president. It's a ticket. It's a two-place ticket, but it's not. You're not voting for one or the other. You're voting for one. Anyway, so with all that being said, just these hearings are just making the Democrats look incredibly, shall I say, idiotic. I'm tempted to say foolish. You know, I'm not calling them fools. I'm just saying what they're doing is foolish. And the whole thing of stupid as stupid does kind of rings true with these people. And I don't know how else to say it. But that's where we're going with that. So, folks, I'd like to have a longer show today, but I really can't get into it much longer. I've got some other things I need to take care of today. And I'll keep an eye on what's happening. Tomorrow morning there'll be another show a little bit earlier, in fact. Hopefully getting into the show a little bit earlier tomorrow. But the... right now, the main part of my day is going to be focused on getting some things ready to go for tomorrow. But I have to head off to where am I going to be? I think I'm Buffalo. I'm not sure. Buffalo somewhere. Yeah, I think I'm going to Buffalo. And I think I'll be spending some time in Cedar Rapids as well. But we'll see. We'll see how that goes. So there you go. What is this happening to my? I don't want my calendar up. Okay, there you go. Let's just get rid of that. Just close that. Quit calendar. There you go. That's all I've got to say about that. I think that I just about spilled everything. As the day goes on, I'm sure we'll hear more about the tragedy in D.C. My heart goes out to everybody there, dealing with the lack of with the loss, as well as all the people who are stuck there, all the chaos that's going to cause of the airport being closed and people trying to get around and people coming in and keep people going out. Just all that all that's happening there is just it's a mess for everybody. So there's that, and I'll keep an eye on what's happening with the hearings as well today. There's some more hearings coming up. See what happens there. But folks, thank you for listening. I really do appreciate my listening audience. I can't tell you how much. The tomorrow morning's show will be a lot earlier and probably even shorter. I don't know. It'll see how it is. We'll do the wrap up for the whole week. See how it goes. God bless everybody. Take care. Have a great rest of the day. See ya.